Blog Talk Radio.
Don Show. My name is Don Allen. Over at Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. How are you doing on this stormy Wednesday night?
Don, I'm doing fine. My entourage and myself, we roared in, if you will, to these beautiful studios. First, spring precipitation, if you will. We probably need it. It was awful dusty out there today. Those winds were 35, 40 miles an hour, if you will. So we need a little bit of that rain to kind of wet things down, Donald. if you will, things are going on, if you will. I've also been asked by public safety officials, law enforcement, to just kind of indicate the terrible state that find ourselves in. You know, a couple of weeks ago we talked about the events in downtown Minneapolis. Over 300 participants fighting up and down the streets there on St. Patty's Day, you know.
Yes,
it's called. We've had back-to-back homicides different parts of the city. Second homicide in a couple of days downtown, and then we had a 17-year-old African-American youngster shot and killed last night around the 2200 block on 13th Avenue, I believe it was. We had a man shot, killed outside of the garage. We had another person shot and killed. There's been a number of shootings. You know, Don, I'm told that young people are fighting every day now. Every day they're fighting.
Well, you know, those Black Lives Matter, and, you know, they're out in the street and doing what they need to do to kind of stop this, I would hope, you know, after all the rhetoric they put out.
I was hoping for that, Don, but, you know, it appears not to be happening, if you will, with the exception of K.G. Wilson, who I understand has kind of been persona non grata to the extent that, you know, the leadership has basically said they don't need his assistance. But I don't see that happening. Now, one of our council members, I'm not going to name the council member at this particular point, but one of our council members said in a conversation with one of our citizens here just a couple weeks ago, do you know, Don, there is really no plan that was put together to deal with the possibility of a hot summer, which already has started? Can you believe that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely I can believe that, because you have people, you know, blowing smoke in the mayor's direction. Talking about they have it under control, you know, they're meeting with this person and that group. And Mr. Edwards, as you know, from being the historian here in the Twin Cities or in the state of Minnesota and all over, it's not happening here. Again, there's no preparation for jobs in the summer for these youths. I mean, they have that little step-up program, but if you work for the city and you have a nephew, cousin, or son or daughter that's that age, you know, that there's nothing left for the community members. And so they haven't paid much attention to making sure that there is some kind of activities. Remember, Mr. Edwards, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the Neighborhood Youth Corps?
And I
had told you, you know, I grew up, born and raised in the Twin Cities. And in Minneapolis, when you turn 14, you could get a summer job. All you had to do was go tell them you wanted to work. And you'd work 40 hours a week. You'd make your checks. You have money to go out, take your girlfriend out if you had one back then, or just buy your summer clothes. And, you know, every year from the time I was 14, Mr. Edwards, to the time I was 17, I don't think my mother spent one of her red pennies on my fall clothes for high school, because I worked all summer long.
Right, right. Don, you're breaking up just a tad here on my end.
Okay.
A little static there. You may want to turn those dials. Want to make sure that all of this is there. By the way, our phone lines will be open in a couple of minutes. We have a couple other, looks like breaking stories that do tie in with the violence that has begun, actually has been going on, has been escalating here in the last couple of weeks, ever since the fighting, rioting in downtown Minneapolis, if you will. You know, a couple of shootings in front of Target Field, home of the Minnesota Twins, just in the last couple of weeks, couple of shootings north side, if you will, around the parks.
Yes.
If you will, just not comfortable. I'm hearing from law enforcement that irrespective of the roundup, if you will, of some individuals, others are allowed to go free because of their, I hate to say it, makes it sound like Chicago, but because of their political connections, there are some young people that are allowed to continue to create mayhem on the streets of our city, if you will. Similar problems in St. Paul, the shootings and et cetera over there, gang battling, fighting downtown, if you will, in the skyways of St. Paul specifically. And I've asked the question, I mean, you know, the plan, and then like I said, I was finally informed that really there is no plan, just kind of go, you know, by the cuff of your neck kind of thing and hope for the best. I just don't think that that's going to work. Let me also say this, Donald. You and I talked about it. I know you did some recon, if you will. You know,
yes.
We have a lot of construction that has gone on, a lot of construction still going on,
yes.
Some new proposed construction. Last night, I think, at the Capri Theater here in North Minneapolis, Sherman and Associates, who are clearly a questionable group, announcing the construction along along the 800 block on West Broadway. Another, get this now, another job development program. You know, can you believe the school district, which is just four blocks away, will have offices there? I mean, with all that empty space they've got in the school district headquarters at 1250 West Broadway, 135 employees were let out the door a week ago. I'm just trying to understand why we don't have a better, we have better numbers for African Americans that should be working. Now, you know, I know that some of the powerful leaders, and I read the article like others did of the Fab Four, wrote the letter to the Star Tribune criticizing, castigating the Star, and calling our good friend, Louis King, probably one of the greatest saviors in the history, certainly the modern history of Minnesota, talking about the many jobs and et cetera. Only problem is I never see any documentation that supports that. You know what I mean? Now, this comes at a troubling time, Donna.
Yes.
I received word from the Urban League's national headquarters in New York City. You know, that's where they're located. I know that you were in some kind of consultation with the national NAACP. I'm hearing rumors from these national organizations out of their headquarters. I understand information is being posted. I understand that the NAACP of Minneapolis is being looked at for a possible change of leadership. And I have to say that I've been informed, though, you know, maybe it was just gossip coming out of the National Urban League headquarters in New York, that Scott Gray has stepped down. As head of the Minneapolis Urban League, if you will, the board apparently received his resignation effective a date only known to them. Understanding is, according to sources at the National Urban League headquarters, as well as local sources, that he has accepted a position with a cap agency outside of the state of Minnesota.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, he and Eric Bachmood received the fellowships for 2015, which essentially means $100,000 for the year, as long as they keep working on their missions. And so I know that the Minneapolis Urban League, as you know, has been cutting back payment for everyone and reducing staff to a skeleton crew. So
about
this
nine
is his,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is his opportunity to launch, you know, to get the hell up out of there. And, you know, I've heard nothing on the web or seen nothing to that extent, but, I mean, they're keeping it under wraps. And, you know, he, like I said, he's the Bush bull. We'll see what happens.
Well, that's what the, like I said, the sources in the National Urban League headquarters, as you know, we lost our St. Paul Urban League. You remember that a couple of years ago?
Yes.
4 years ago. And that was done in a similar manner, kind of clandestinely, if you will, with a lot of denials and et cetera by the board at that time that was actually phasing out the Urban League of St. Paul. Willie Mae Wilson, who had been the executive director / president after the designation change, and her husband, former Councilman William Wilson, apparently were caught up in some things, didn't go well, problems with the building. You remember that? They lost their building and wound up losing everything. So I know that we're not supposed to talk about this as these organizations go under, if you will. Conversation saying that basically the NAACP president is possibly moving on, if you will. Also, NERC, the Northside Development Agency, powerful Northside Development Agency, doing all that work, involved in multiple programs. In fact, the Devin George project there on Golden Valley Road and Penn. I'm hearing complaints, by the way, maybe Ishmael, the executive director of that powerful organization, can explain why there are no African-Americans working on the site. But then I was told by, you know, powerful sources that it's not important that African-Americans find employment. It's just important that they receive training, whatever that is supposed to mean, you know what I'm saying? And so we have at least a possibility over the next couple of weeks that three of our powerful organizations will be looking at new leadership, if you will. Again, the phone lines are certainly open. By the way, I've received just a text and it's so sad, Mr. Allen, indicating that the young man who was shot and killed right off Franklin last night was Maurice Brown, an 11th grader.
Wow. 11th grader,
Mr. Allen. That name is now being confirmed by a law enforcement authority. Shot and killed, if you will. There have been a lot of shots fired today on both sides of the city, if you will. Had a lot of police activity. But anyways, the latest victim here in our city, 17-year-old Maurice Brown, shot and killed in South Minneapolis by a gunman, if you will. So just want to kind of our condolences to his family, loved ones, and et cetera, as well as students at the high school that he attended here in Minneapolis, South High School, if you will. I'm just so saddened by it. I was expecting possibly, Mr. Allen, maybe you can help me with this, that our leadership, the Fab Four as an example, were saying that these are the best of times for the Negro race here in the Twin Cities. And their letter, et op piece, if you will, to the Star Tribune, talking in terms of the many positions of authority and responsibility. I was a little puzzled because they identified Josie Johnson as one of the great leaders and activists and et cetera, and I thought that was just great. It's just too bad that we don't have, you know, Josie Johnson back on the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota because we don't have any African Americans there. And also I was trying to figure out at what point should we be concerned. We've talked about it on these programs, Mr. Allen, over the last year, that for the first time in 34 years, Don, that neither city councils in Minneapolis and St. Paul has an African-American on the city council.
They sure don't.
We've lost those. Of course, we do have three African Americans in the legislature, two in the Senate, one in the House, if you will. But, you know, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, we had a couple of African Americans, you know what I mean, in the legislature. And it was interesting back then, they were from the suburbs. The legendary Senator Dr. Lewis, and then the state representative from Bloomington, by the way, Ray Pleasant. You remember that, don't you, Doc?
Yes, I do.
Yes, Ray Pleasant, and a Republican. Dr. Lewis was a Democrat. And now that was 30 years ago, and I remember how everyone was talking in terms that if people, well, such as myself, shut up about access and et cetera, that we'd have a lot more, and we'd have five or six black legislators and et cetera. And of course, we did have for a period of time a black mayor. You remember?
Sharon,
yes,
we did.
Belton.
Miss Belton, yes.
That was, oh my God, Don, that was 15 years ago. So we don't have any participatory presence in the government of either city. We do have Ms. Toni Carter is a commissioner in Ramsey County, and she was one of the signatories of the letter, which indicated the great things that are happening, the great things that are being done here in the Twin Cities for the African-American population. Only thing is, I was trying to, and I know I gave you a call and you did some research. We were trying to find out, well, we were told that Thor Construction is one of the largest African-American for-profits in the United States, making already $25 million on the stadium, the $1.6 billion stadium that is being built for the Viking football team. I couldn't find any documentation that supported that, and then, you know, we did take a look at the 1099s, which did not seem to be reflective of a $25 million infusion into Thor Construction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And, I mean, we've still been trying to track that down because, Mr. Edwards, I have a huge problem. And, you know, you could cuss on Blog Talk Radio, but don't get me cussing because or cursing because we got a problem with these people, the Fantastic Four, as I call them, and the Four Horsemen.
I call them the Fab Four. I call
Fab
them the Fab
Four. Yeah. Yeah. See, the problem is, if you look at it, maybe only a couple of them, if any, have a relationship with the black community. And I'm not going to pick any one of them out and single them out, but the main challenge is when you get these people who are part of the bourgeoisie, who cannot communicate with the subdued, there's a huge problem. And I'm just telling you, I'm looking at that, I'm reading it, I'm saying, what are you protecting? You know, you're protecting some interest that has nothing to do with moving the community forward, but trying to keep your names above water. And eventually that Marxist ship will sink pretty quickly. Especially with these guys running around crazy. You know, you get a 17.
Well, but I understand the discussion going on amongst groups like the Monitors, the Powerful Monitors, which is the cream, if you will, at the very top of the brown coffee. The group known as the Monitors have indicated that these are the best of all times, if you will, that prosperity has descended upon the African-American communities in both Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the greater metropolitan area, if you will. And, you know, Mr. Albert and I are chastised and criticized that we in any way even suggest that these are not the best of all times. And, you know, I keep looking. I'm trying to see the statistical data which supports that position and the position of that letter. Ed Opp piece that was sent to the Star Tribune. I'm trying to find all of the goodies that are being made reference to. I know as a backbencher that one is not supposed to do anything other than read the London Times, you know what I mean, and say aye or nay, when the floor leader, you know, comes up and whispers in your ear. But I'm trying to find it. I'm trying to take a look at who the greatest and largest private African-American employer is, Do you have that information, Don? Have you been able to recover?
We must be
talking about somebody that has at least 150 to 200 people working for.
Yeah. I don't have that data, and you know, I've tried several times to get in touch with Ms. Leah Haggard at the Minnesota Board of Commerce, and I've received no telephone, return telephone calls, or emails, and so I mean, if there is this entity available, out there, it's unknown to myself, Mr. Edwards, and that's one of the things that you have to ask some of these people. You know, they're going around saying that everything's beautiful. Well, what company do you have, and how many people can you hire?
Let me say this on that particular point, because we were criticized. We received some criticism a number of weeks ago, a couple months ago, when we raised questions about the new industrial park that is being planned and developed, if you will. I think William English indicated over 3,000 jobs will come with that industrial park. We still haven't found out where the industrial park is going to be built. But I made to understand that heavy hitters, both here and in New York, are in play, including the head of our economic development corporation here in the city, if you will, as well as Mr. English. By the way, I was informed, and my mind was clear, if you will, got my mind right, that Mr. English is now a special consultant to the company that has been selected to actually manage the Viking Stadium after it is completed in July of 2016. And that Mr. English is setting the priorities, if you will, and developing the plan, you know, like the equity plan that was developed by representatives of the Met Council, in which Mr. Cunningham serves on, for the Viking State. You remember that the equity plan, don't you, Don?
Yeah, it's supposed to get done in, June 2013 and was never done, right, if I'm not mistaken.
A draft came out, a draft. And what I was reminded of is that, you know, there are some of us that are not qualified to raise questions relevant to the protocol. And so, you know, what was basically told is that the diversity or affirmative action director for the Met Council, she and her associate, a young Caucasian, received their compensation, though they only got half of their money because the Vikings themselves were pretty ticked off because they were expecting something a little bit more finite, if you will. But there was a draft that was given to Ted Mondale, and of course we know that some of the problems with diversity has caused the rift. You know, as you know, Don, there is a rift now on the five-member board. That very powerful board, the Sports Facilities Authority, there is a rift there. Questions have been raised about the chairwoman. Questions have been raised about our good friend Ted Mondale. And there are some heavyweights, including a former Senate Majority Leader, Dwayne Benson, a Republican, who have raised some serious questions about what's really going on down there. Now, I understand part of that has to do with the absence of information. And that Star Tribune piece that the Fab Four confronted and denounced, if you will. And so these things are happening, and at the same time we see information, NAACP indicated over 800 African Americans are working on the stadium.
Yeah, well, you know, the NAACP, Minneapolis NAACP hasn't had a meeting in over a year, Mr. Edwards, and there are no reports anywhere.
You mean a month, don't you, now? You said a year?
No, I said over a year. Going on a year and a half, no meetings. And so I don't know how it's even functioning besides the president using the NAACP acronym as some kind of a bullying tool, a bully pulpit, basically. So, I mean,
okay,
I
Don,
have
you
to...
keep breaking up there. You may be getting a little too close to your microphone because, you know, we don't want folks to say that we said something that we didn't. Well, wait a minute. You're saying that the NAACP of Minneapolis has not met since February of 2014?
Yeah, they have not had an official meeting where people receive notices.
Wait a minute, Don. I have to now. You know,
okay.
I'm coming from the left. This is R. Edwards from the left talking to my co-host Don Allen of the right. That couldn't be correct, Don, because they just took office in January of 2014. You mean they took office, went through the ceremony, and then never had a membership meeting again?
No, they had. I mean, you know, Mr. Edwards, I was the second vice chair for all of the.
Oh, that's right, Mr. Allen. You were.
Yes.
You were.
For all of 2.5 months, and their main concern was getting me out of there so they could go do what they wanted to do. So after they managed to do that, I'm still a member in good standing. I have 3 membership cards. And was mailed to me by the National NAACP. The first one
said,
"You
said that on a program 2 weeks ago, and folk thought that that was funny." Now let me ask the question again. You just got through saying it seconds ago. You are a member in good standing, right?
I am a member of good standing. They sent me 3 membership cards. The first card said "I."
Okay.
The second card said "Love." The third card said "You." So that means that I'm in there. Okay. And so.
Okay.
Let me
ask this question, and again, the phone line is, I imagine people waiting for it, but let me ask this question. I understand that the NAACP, both state and the St. Paul and Minneapolis NAACP, are involved in sensitive negotiations with the Mayo Clinic to provide workers and et cetera. Is that still in play?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, Mr. Edwards, they're down there trying to hustle some stuff that's going on through those different little LLCs they're trying to, you know, hook up. We had the state conference chair up here not too long ago, dibbling and dabbling, getting into stuff. And
he is also the president of the Rochester branch of the NAACP. Is that correct?
W.C. Jordan, yeah, Mr. Jordan.
Brother W.C. Jordan, yes, sir. Powerful
yeah, brother
man.
W.C. Jordan. And I just got a text here on the chat room that said that he was at New Salem Baptist Church Sunday checking out Stevie Wonder.
W.C. came all the way up from Rochester. Mm-hmm. Oh, that is outstanding. That is just absolutely outstanding. I imagine that was a refresher for him to continue the negotiation. Are they still negotiating with... Oh, that's right. You know, there is a report, and it's the thing, and we talked about it when we talked to the 2 state representatives a couple of Wednesdays ago. Oh, that's right. The reason that Edward McDonald came under fire, and it looks like, you know, we didn't really talk about it last week. We had so many other things that it looks like that the Council on Black Minnesotans got a reprieve. But one of the reasons that there was concern about them, and I think I heard that Senator Chamberlain, Republican,
yes.
If you will, from one of our southern districts, reminded members of the excellent investigative job that the Council on Black Minnesotans did as it pertains to a complaint by the Olmsted County attorney as well as the leadership of both the Mayo Clinic and St. Mary's Hospital. You know, do you think we could ever get that report issued and made public, if you would?
I'm pretty sure I could actually even find it and post it because I am actually on an update site. You know, Torres Ray, Senator Torres Ray and Senator Lane, who we had on the air, both their bills are sidelined. They're dead. The bills to eliminate.
I saw that. I was surprised. The Colombian Torres Rey, if you will, she's from Colombia, if you will. I was surprised because there was a lot of chatter going on in the hallways and corridors of the state capitol that she had put together the master plan to gut. You know, that was the word that was being used, to gut the Council on Black Minnesotans. And then I read an article in the powerful Minneapolis Star Tribune that said that both of those bills had died.
Yes.
In fact, Senator Pappas became so frustrated she got up and walked out of the committee meeting, didn't
yep,
she?
Yep, that's what they said. That's that she got up and
yes,
walked out.
They were going to bring that Negro his head, weren't they? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd sort of like to, you know, have it posted, if you will, through our technical people, our IT people, so that people can make their own judgment relevant to the investigation by the Council on Black Minnesotans under Edward McDonald as the lead investigator. Because apparently the governor was impressed with the report because, He then authorized a satellite office to be opened in Rochester, as we first exclusively reported, 5, 6 months ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, like I said, phone lines are open. Me and Mr. Allen are chit-chatting here. Information coming out of Baltimore, Maryland, and New York City. New York City dealing with the future of the Urban League here in the Twin Cities. It is the Twin Cities, isn't it? Because there is no St. Paul Urban League anymore.
Yes.
And the Minneapolis NAACP, this coming out of Baltimore, Maryland, if you will. And then, of course, the situation with NERC, Northside Development, Redevelopment Corporation or whatever. So we're looking at possibility of 3 vacancies, if you will. Two of them well-paid positions, if you will. The head or the president of the Urban League of Minneapolis, what was it, about $105,000, $108,000?
I think it was $112,000 with some benefits, like $5,000 or $6,000 in, like, incidental benefits, you know. So,
okay.
I mean, it's not to sneeze at, but that was on their last, that was like a couple of years ago. There's no telling with the pay cuts over there. He might, you know, they might be buying him dinner once a week or something and giving him
money. But he has 2 for-profit businesses that he controls. If I'm not mistaken, in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, the Subway.
He has a Dairy Queen and a submarine franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And then, of course, I assume that Ishmael at NERC is probably at around $75,000 to $80,000, I would assume.
Yes, somewhere in that neighborhood, I'm sure, yes.
And by the way, they tell me they're doing a lot of rehabbing on some properties that I'm talking about the Northside residents. They're doing a lot of rehabbing, if you will. I know a lot of traffic has been seen going in and out of those houses, right? So they're working on the inside now.
Yeah, they're very concerned okay. Yeah, I'll put it like this, Mr. Edwards. If you're going to be working in them houses, make sure you're working on the houses and not doing nothing else in them houses. So we'll put it like that.
I cannot even imagine a organization of that stature would allow anything else to go on in the house other than working on improving the house. I mean, I couldn't even believe there would be anything else going on inside of the houses, if you will. I know they have 6 or 7. But anyways, give them a phone number. Phone lines are open. I imagine some people in the chat room, if you will. We have been talking here for the first half hour on the rumors. We have to say they're rumors out of New York City and Baltimore, Maryland, and out of our own Twin Cities with regards to 3 organizations and leadership changes that apparently have taken place, or whatever is going on. But I just can't fathom that would be happening, because with the kind of progress that the African-American community is making, according to the Fab Four, I mean, you know, things are just, well, it's like paradise. It's like Shangri-La.
The only
person that we lack right now is Ronald Coleman, who played the lead role in that movie, I think it was 1937, Shangri-La.
Mm.
But, Ms. Donner, I'd like to, at this point, because we had a number of inquiries, Mr. Allen and myself are quite concerned about what is happening to a Liberian father and his family and et cetera in this city. I was at the vigil this past Saturday. Mr. Allen, I was just stunned by the denunciation and allegations against the father by a undercover agent for the Crystal Police Department, accusing the father of actually setting up and, well, actually maybe even murdering his own 10-year-old child, if you will. And Iris Perez, the top-notch reporter for KMSP, made allegations. Now, I have to tell our audience that Mr. Allen made inquiry of KMSP yesterday, asking them if they would produce the document that what Iris Perez referred to on the broadcast Saturday on KMSP Fox News 9, in which she said the father had taken out a $30,000 insurance policy against the life of his child, and she implied that this was the prima facie, if you will, and grounds for the father harming his child, which was then loudly supported by a undercover or informant who was brought into play, who maintained that actually, in my presence, I was standing about 3 feet away from him,
yeah,
that he had actually informed KMSP that the policy had been taken out of against the child's life. And that was puzzling because Iris Perez said that she had received information from the police. And then I realized as I was looking at the individual that he must have been a police officer,
mm-hmm.
a law enforcement officer brought here, especially for this particular assignment, because the Crystal Police Department's got itself in a real bind with regards to the things that they did not do in the first 3 to 4 days that this 10-year-old child of color was reported missing. He's now been gone. This is the 15th day, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Allen.
Yes, yes, Mr. Edwards, yeah, it is.
The 15th day. But again, those phone lines are open.
Yeah.
We are interested to see. We know that some African-American mothers, primarily located in Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, that area, Crystal, have continued to take up the search. The police department, the Crystal Police Department, said that they had, in fact, at one point they said they actually had information, pictures, and et cetera, of the father at the river's edge there along the shores of the North Regional Park here in our beloved Minneapolis, implying that the father had taken his son, after his son had gotten off the school bus, that had taken his son to the river and threw him into the river. Was that kind of what you as a citizen was kind of left with, Mr. Allen? I mean, what was your observation?
Well, I was listening to these reports that were done by Iris Perez, and I was a little bit concerned because the media turned the focus away from the search for the boy into a castration, or crucifixion, I should say, of the father. And so when that happens, there are no massive searches, people walking around in the woods, holding hands, you know, doing that line search where everybody has a space and moves forward 100 yards.
Yes, yes,
I mean,
yes, absolutely.
That has not even happened. And so, I mean, they're doing the psychological or behavior analysis piece that the FBI uses by keeping the cameras in front of Pierre Collins' face. But the problem is that this Minnesota nice doesn't understand the African culture. You know, giving him a lie detector test that's wrong 98% of the time is and then reporting he failed the lie detector test is not doing anybody any good. What we need to be doing is having those reporters and that yellow journalism shut down and making sure that we're looking for this boy, period.
Well, let me say something, because I've had a couple of people that I've had to clarify with them. I've had an opportunity to be in contact with some Liberian leadership. You know, it was a terrible thing that they did, and the Crystal Police really did a masterful job of maligning and slandering the father. He volunteered to take a polygraph.
Yeah.
This was after they had confiscated his car, they had taken his computer, they had taken his iPhone, they had taken half of his clothes, if you will, and et cetera. And in fact, he gave a couple of interviews. I thought one of the better interviews was an interview he did with Todd Wilson, African American reporter for KSTP Channel 5 here in Minneapolis, a ABC affiliate. And so he was doing everything to cooperate, and so when they asked him to do the polygraph, he went in, even though he had unfortunately made a terrible mistake, and I don't think that he and his advisors recognized it. On day three, and we're coming back to the polygraph, on day three, Mr. Collins went to the Crystal Police Department to ask questions about why there had not been an Amber Alert. You know, it's still never been an Amber Alert. They never done an Amber Alert, which is unusual for a child 10 and under. The Jacob Wetterling Foundation, which has been just absolutely stellar in helping the family. I mean, it's good to see them reach out and provide the kind of special expertise that is so desperately needed. But it is very, very unusual for a child of that young to disappear, as Barway Collins has done. I mean, he's gone. And not call an Amber Alert. And so Pierre Collins made a mistake. He made a kind of a double mistake, and there's been a lot of discussion about it in law enforcement, and that, number one, he went to the Crystal Police Department, like, on day three, and raised questions about why there hadn't been an Amber Alert. The chief of the Crystal Police Department, who is a female, called an immediate press conference and denounced the father by indicating that he was not being truthful, particularly around the issue of the uncle, quote-unquote uncle. Now, later, Iris Perez of Channel 9, KMSP, that Mr. Allen and I have been talking about, made a broadcast and made a statement over the air that, and this was after the vigil Saturday, that Mr. Collins was a liar, and that the same thing the chief kind of said. The chief said he wasn't honest. Iris Perez said that he had lied about having a blood relative here in the state of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true. He never did that. But what she did was identified one of his brothers, Tillman Collins, who flew here from somewhere else in the United States to be with his brother, along with two other biological brothers. And she made a significant effort to refer to him continuously as uncle, as opposed to indicate. Of course, you mean if he's uncle, obviously he's Pierre Collins is his brother. But this thing about uncle becomes significant with regards to the so-called video on the bus. Oh, by the way, that was a special needs bus too, Mr. Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Which the law says that when you let a child off, you're supposed to watch and to make sure the child enters the abode or home or et cetera. Driver didn't do that. And I understand a bus driver really has never been questioned, if you will. But now, going back to day three, Mr. Collins did become concerned, raised some questions. The next thing, the chief was saying that he had not given honest responses and et cetera. And then right after that, a couple of imams who are Liberian, if you will, but are part of the Muslim religion, came forward and were offering prayer and support and et cetera. And sources indicate to this commentator that things really got ugly. That's when Mr. Collins started being referred to as that black terrorist, that African terrorist, and such things as that. And everything went downhill.
Yeah.
And I don't think that anyone has really looked at how things changed as it pertains to how he was treated until those two things happened. Number one, he raised the question about the Amber Alert. And number two, members of the Liberian community's Muslim or Islamic community came to support him and et cetera. They didn't rant and rail and et cetera. They came to pray and et cetera. But apparently there are factions within the Crystal Police Department that are very, very, well, first of all, they're hostile to black people. I mean, we know that based on the history of the Crystal Police Department. We call it Little Ferguson here in Minnesota. But there are entities, officers who really feel strongly about Muslims, if you will, very negative. And mm-hmm. that was the beginning of the downfall, if you will, in my estimation and the estimation of others who have watched this very closely. And so we just thought once again, as we did last week, that it was incumbent that someone speak up, say something, and try to keep the candle burning to the extent that hopefully there will be a meaningful effort by the authorities to find this child. And as I said before, Mr. Allen, I was really shocked at the coordination between KMSP and this undercover officer, as well as two other individuals that were accompanying him. And by the way, I'm going to do this tonight because of the damage that has been done. The undercover car was a late model automobile, license number 849MIK. They were so bold that they were actually speaking to the brother. He had one of those. What is that thing that you technicians like to wear, Bluetooth or whatever it's called?
Yeah, Bluetooth, yeah, in the ear.
Yeah. Yeah, the brother had his earpiece on, and what happened was the individual in that car and that license number was coordinating things, and that apparently they were also coordinating activities with KMSP. When that question was asked about the $30,000 insurance, it stunned everybody. Now, as we said before, Mr. Allen, representing the group of Don and Ron, did ask KMSP yesterday if they would release the insurance policy that Iris Perez said had been provided to her, and the knowledge of it had been provided to her by a police officer.
And I do have that recording.
As I said just earlier, I guess I now realize that the police officer, I guess she was talking about, or undercover agent or whatever, was the man who brutally, verbally, attacked Pierre Collins on this past Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have that clip from me talking to Channel 9, if any of you care to play it, but I'll be putting it on YouTube later on so people can get a chance to actually listen to it, because it is pretty interesting. So
you're talking about from Iris Perez asking the question about the policy?
No, when we called Fox, you know, the other day.
Oh, yes. I think we are compelled and obligated to put that out there in the public domain, because Mr. Allen was challenged about what Ms. Perez said. I don't think that they realized that there was a member of the team, if you will, who was standing right there. In fact, technically, I was standing in between her and the police undercover operative, if you will. You know, and she clearly said that information on the insurance policy had been provided to her by police. That's what she clearly said.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
let me just let that roll here so people know what we're talking about here real quick, Mr. Edwards. How's that?
Go ahead. Go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
Hello. How are you? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I can hear you say, how about, but it's kind of like, how about, wow.
Okay. This should just work great then right here. So I am calling regarding the report on Barway Collins.
Okay.
And done by your reporter, Iris Perez. My name is Don Allen. I'm with the Independent Business News Network. And I'm trying to find out, your reporter mentioned that there was a $30,000 insurance policy taken out on the child. Would Fox 9 have a copy of that?
I don't think so.
Okay. The young boy's uncle was identified by Iris Perez as an uncle that was the one that he was hollering to, was not actually in town on the day of his abduction or disappearance. So that's another thing. But, you know, for a reporter to get on the air and say that there's a $30,000 insurance contract and not have a policy and not have that in hand is really, you know, shoddy journalism, first of all. Second of all,
you think she said that he did have one?
Yes, it's all in your report. It's all her report.
Or that there were questions surrounding that.
She said, quote, he took out a $30,000 insurance policy on his son last month. And for a news agency, you're the only news agency that has had a reporter to even say that. None of the other news agencies have said anything like that. So in order for someone to say that, they must have a copy of.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, we get into kind of some back and forth with her because
I think that's good enough, Don. I think that authenticates the fact that this program did reach out to KMSP to ask them if they would make public the document that Iris Perez made reference to in the presence of over 100 people who had been gathered for a prayer vigil, a situation in which the stepmother became distraught, fainted, if you will, had to be revived, if you will. The father was just about to crumble. People were concerned. In the meanwhile, you had this police undercover operative screaming and hollering and accusing Mr. Collins of being involved in an action that made his son disappear, maybe even murdered his son, and et cetera. And then I heard him with my own ears as he spoke. As I said, I was approximately 2 feet away from him. WCCO has footage of yours truly standing next to this undercover agent, and there is a gentleman on the other side of him, a short Caucasian wearing the colors, what we call in the police business the colors of the day, who the African American undercover officer told him that he was the one that had told Iris Perez about the insurance policy and had made it available. I was shocked because insurance policies and the purchase and et cetera is really a confidential matter. You know, there can be serious consequences irrespective of who decides to pass the information out. Serious consequences. I was shocked, Mr. Allen, really, when the question was asked yesterday of KMSP, when they indicated that they did not have any documentation to support that question, if you will. By the way, Iris Perez continued to talk about that on the 6 o'clock news. It kind of changed by 10 on Saturday, and then I noticed they backed away from it, if you will. But it was clear that was a well-coordinated effort by them and by the undercover officer working with the Crystal Police Department. Because they really, I mean, you know, by and large, they actually destroyed that vigil and have really created a serious rift within the Liberian community and other communities, because people now looking, you know, sideways at the father, taking the reporting of the white media here as the gospel. In fact, in my column that will come out next week, I've raised questions about the damage that has been done intentionally, maliciously, with malice and forethought. And really, they have, contrary to what they've said, other than having a boat out on the Mississippi, where they say that they observed. See, they initially said they had observed and that he had been observed there on the shores of the Mississippi across from North Regional Park. And so they basically stopped looking anywhere other than in the Mississippi River.
And speaking of the Mississippi River, I'd like to report, Mr. Edwards, this is just off the wire. Searchers recovered a woman's body from the river where they've been searching for Jennifer Hole, the University of Minnesota student who
jumped from the 10th Avenue Bridge. That's absolutely correct. Had tremendous coverage, very positive coverage was given to that. There was nothing approaching a statement that there was any member of her family involved in foul play and et cetera. They had difficulty because at one point there was even discussion about before Ms. Huell was found, that there was discussion about the fact that she may have been attacked by an African-American, a group of African-Americans who have been preying on students in the university Dinkytown area. Except the police, after getting information from a white University of Minnesota basketball player who remembered something that the deceased said, that she said, we're now looking at the case of a young Carlson school graduate. They went back and pulled the video and of the bridges there over the Mississippi, and there, unfortunately, regrettably, and tragically, was the video of her plunging without assistance and no one around into the Mississippi River. And so
I know our prayers go out to her family that at least her body has been recovered, if you will. You would think, by the way, that given her body recovered in basically a day and a half, you would think that based on what the chief of the Crystal Police Department said on day 3, 4, and 5, that the father was responsible for possibly throwing his son into the river, you would think that that child's body would have come to the surface by now, wouldn't you? 15 days?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, because he would have been north of the of where the young lady went in at the 10th Street Bridge. And basically, in this situation, everything basically gets caught up at the Ford Dam, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Which flows to from north to south. So, but Mr. Allen, we don't have any calls. We're down to the last 3 or 4 minutes. The phone lines. So, give one final shot. Phone lines are open.
Well, they're open 347-426-3904. Again, that number 347-426-3904. Yep. So, Mr. Edwards, I was reading something in the newspaper about this police federation. Kind of, you know, curious about what's happening with those folks.
Well, we're going to take a little bit more time then, Mr. Allen, so that we can give a clear and concise. So, if you would punch in and to take a little bit of time. Star Tribune front page story, this morning's edition of the paper, talks about something that's rare. It's very rare for a contested contest in the involving the Police Federation. I don't think they've had one in 50 years. John DeMonaco has been president for 16 years, as was pointed out in the article, and has been more than fair and supportive of African-American police officers and others, if you will, in the Minneapolis Police Department. One of the issues that is involved here, and the reason that Lieutenant Crow, who I know and have known of his activities for a long time, is that that President DeMonaco has not been hard-lined enough about the promotion of African-Americans in the Minneapolis Police Department. That, in other words, he should have stood up. And let me give you an example. Deputy Chief Amelia Arredondo, one of the most respected police officers anywhere, who was just appointed to Deputy Chief and Special Administrative Assistant to Chief Jhené Harto, there were factions within the police department and rank and file that were enraged that he and then Sergeant, now Commander Gerald Moore, also one of the most respected African Americans, who has taken over all responsibilities and matters for training, recruitment, and et cetera, that these two Negroes were promoted. Though Deputy Chief Arredondo replaced another African American, Edward Frizzell, but, you know, some in the Federation felt that they could live with Eddie, you know. In fact, we invited Mr. Frizzell to be on these programs back in October when he was running against incumbent Sheriff Richard Stanek, who defeated him by, 200,000 votes or something like that. Anyways, this thing has grown rather ugly, if you will, and it's going to be a close race. The race will take place in the election will take place in 2 weeks. But the deep undercurrent that no one talks about is the history of Lieutenant Crow, if you will, and some of his activities, and particularly a rather nefarious situation and case dealing with a entity called City Heat. And for those that have their little computers and et cetera, you may want to go back, take a look at Star Tribune, take a look at City Pages back in the day when Steve Perry was the editor, and take a look at the City Heat group, which is a group comprised of extremely right-wing officers, if you will, who had formed a motorcycle group along with others of their colleagues in Des Moines, St. Paul, Milwaukee, and Chicago specifically. In fact, over the years, I periodically show pictures of these individuals with their swastikas and et cetera on at different bars and et cetera, particularly in Wisconsin and some parts of Minnesota, as well as a couple pictures of some activities at a bar in Rapid City, South Dakota. So that's the genesis, Mr. Allen, is that, you know, Lieutenant Crowe, Robert, has said that things are going to change, you know, that we're there's too much consideration for the colored situation, you know, too many colors are being promoted, et cetera. So that's really what's at play.
Wow.
Oh, by the way, Lieutenant Crowe, as a member of the executive committee of the Federation, voted not to take any action against the two officers in that situation. You remember up there in Green Bay?
Yes.
Where they talked, not only did they talk about black people, but they even talked about the chief, referring to her as a dyke, but they also talked about their fellow black officers, which nobody really wants to get into that. They were asked to apologize by Lieutenant Mike Sorrell as an indication of how deep this thing got, and their position was, I have to use this word, their position was that their First Amendment right and First Amendment protection gave them a right to refer to black police officers as niggers anytime they wanted to. And so when the vote came within the exec committee of the Federation to support their termination by Chief Jhené Harto, Robert and one other board member voted no. He also is the same officer who referred to Congressman Keith Ellison, Democrat 5th Congressional District here in Minnesota, as a Muslim terrorist.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Referred to him as a Muslim terrorist. And get this, he did it in a they were having a sensitivity class. They were in a class dealing with racial sensitivity when he referred to Keith Ellison as a Muslim, black Muslim terrorist. I mean, referred to him as black a number of times, but the key was as a Muslim terrorist. In fact, Chief Tim Dolan at that time issued an apology on behalf of the police department for those comments, even though Robert indicated he didn't say it. But there were like, you know, 18 or 19 officers in this sensitivity class. This was a class on racial sensitivity. So, you know, so much for how that worked. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen? So that's kind of what that story was about. Star Tribune must have picked up on the intel that it's real bitter, it's real ugly right now. And what some white officers are saying is that if Robert gets in, we're going to be able to return to the old days where thumping and stepping on the rights is the order of the day. They pride themselves on being a part of the same philosophy of the head of the New York Benevolent Patrol Officers Association, who you know, became such a lightning rod after the death of Mr. Gardner. You remember Mr. Gardner, the African-American choked to death by New York police?
Yes.
So anyways, this is what is happening, and if elected, Lieutenant Crowe could very well set this department back to the 1950s. And for those that don't know their history around here, because we don't have a history museum, in the 1950s, you had two African-Americans on a police department that was almost 1,000 officers strong. Two.
Yep. Absolutely. We have a service. We have a caller.
Let's get the caller in. Okay.
Live on the air. Go ahead. Caller, you are live.
Hey, how are you guys tonight?
Real good, sir. What can we do for you?
Well, you know, honestly, you know, we're speaking about taking us back. I kind of liken it to what's going on now. I mean, they claim that there's this great multicultural ethnicity going on in the Minneapolis Police Department when, in fact, it isn't. I don't know. I've lived here for quite a while, but I can't remember having anybody of black. I know we haven't had a black police chief, but I don't know if we've had anybody black of significance in any real positions in the Minneapolis Police Department either. Can you guys remember anybody?
Well, when you say in positions, that we just got through mentioning one, we've had a couple, starting in the 1970s, we've had a couple of African-Americans. For the first one was a deputy chief by the name of Jones. And then we've had a couple more. We had Frizzell, if you will. We had Don Harris, who was the deputy chief. Then he was demoted down to lieutenant. And now we have Arredondo, if you will. The most significant promotion that was made that kind of broke the color barrier and took us out of that, you know, only two officers, black officers or Negro officers in the 1950s, was the legendary and beloved Raymond Presley, who became the first inspector of police in 1974 as an outgrowth of the appointment by then Chief Nordland. Who met with the African American community and responded positively to placing an African American or Negro in a position of significant responsibility. Raymond Presley became an inspector of police, and then later he was head of internal affairs, also becoming the first African American, the head of internal affairs. And he also became, when he became a lieutenant, he became only the second lieutenant of African American heritage in the, you know, 140 year history of the Minneapolis.
Well, I think that number one, that's an outrage that more, not even just blacks, but more minorities have not had real significant positions in the Minneapolis Department. I'm trying not to believe that this situation with Barway isn't going to boil down to racial, along racial lines. I do hope that the young man is garnering the attention that a young white man, young white boy would get if he too were kidnapped. Now, I don't understand why, from the evidence or so that they present, that the young man, they're blaming his father. I'm not ready to point the finger at dad and blame dad. But I think that it's a bit inappropriate to publicly, number one, risk the case by naming the father as an alleged suspect. You know, to compromise the case as such, I think to me it speaks inappropriate. And I think the police chief should be speaking of it as such. Whoever leaking this type of information, it's dangerous. And, again, it could compromise the case. If you're really looking for this young man, then I think you need to garner the help of the community and those that knew Barway instead of making enemies of these people. It won't help. You know, it won't help bring this young man home, and it definitely won't help eradicate the situation that's happening right now.
Well, sir, let me say that your point is extremely well taken and is on point, if you will. I have to say to you, though, that there is not a significant effort being made. As we are reporting on this program, that it was day three that everything exploded when the father, in the interest, and Iris Perez has been one of the key reporters of talking in terms that the father has not shown a responsible action or a responsible response to
right.
the disappearance of his son. That is totally untrue. And day three, as we first reported here about 45 minutes ago, the father went to the Crystal Police Department and raised the question about the Amber Alert. As I said before, and I stand by that as it pertains to under color law, that the law basically, and the Jacob Wetterling Foundation will certainly support us on this, is that a child 10 years and under, normally it also it's basically 12 and under, but a child who is 10 years old disappears, irrespective of what the chief of police may say about an irresponsible child, an irresponsible family, you issue an Amber Alert. Now, the
Absolutely.
Crystal Police refused to do that, and they have yet to do that. We're now into day 15 of the disappearance of this 10-year-old child, and they refused to do the Amber. The father made the mistake in the context of offending white power when he went to the station and he asked them why they would not issue the Amber Alert. That's when they made the decision to declare him as a suspect, or specifically in legal terms, a person of interest. I repeat again what the father said in an interview with Todd Wilson of KSTP Channel 5 when he said he did everything to cooperate. They came to him, they said they wanted his car, they wanted his computer, they wanted his iPhone, they wanted half of his clothes, and et cetera. They made him give a DNA, a swab, if you will. And then they tricked him into the polygraph by bringing him in. He did not have an attorney. In fact, he still doesn't have an attorney because
exactly.
All the attorneys have quoted to him prices anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000 to even represent him. But he went in for the polygraph, and they browbeat him with this thing about Uncle. And as Mr. Allen and myself said about 20 minutes ago, Iris Perez, again of KMSP, made a statement that Pierre Collins had lied about the existence of a family member here in the state of Minnesota. She was standing right there when the head of the Liberian organization in Minnesota said specifically that they had been joined by the three biological brothers of Pierre Collins, who had all flown here from other parts of the United States. And so the brother who Iris Perez kept identifying as being the person that Pierre Collins lied about, Tillman Collins, if you will, records clearly show that he was not anywhere close to the state of Minnesota and had, in fact, can account for all of his time during that particular day when Barway disappeared and had just arrived in Minnesota, yet she chose to continue to identify him as a person who had been lied about by the father. Now, that was the genesis for the father. He made a mistake in this regard, but he did not have legal counsel. They browbeat him so bad, they knew his mindset. As Mr. Allen said earlier, they were doing their psychological profiling, etc. So he got up and walked out. Now, technically, under color of law, caller, when you do that, of course, you fail the test. Okay? Of course, no one thought to ask what questions was he asked that he failed. There were no questions that he asked that was asked of him that he failed, other than he kept telling them that he had no blood relative, no brother, if you will, who would be referred to by his son as uncle anywhere in the state of Minnesota. And they kept telling him that he wasn't telling the truth, that he was a liar. And then that's when the chief three times in a 6-day period came out and made sure she was quoted in the major newspapers and on all the television stations as saying that he was not being truthful. And that basically killed him. And then when the undercover officer, operative, black officer, whoever this guy was, screamed out that this man had been responsible for the disappearance and possible death of his son, it just drove a wedge into the community.
And it's utterly ridiculous. Again, that's when the police chief should come out and speak and say that, hey, this office is not responsible for these leaks, and if I find anyone who's responsible in this office, they will be handled appropriately. Again, I think trying to make Barry's father the scapegoat for whatever's happened to the young man is so highly inappropriate and speaks to the issues that still exist with the media when it comes to minorities and the handling of it. Again, there it took so long to even get this young man, a search party sent out for him, which is utterly ridiculous. I think what's going to happen is we've got to, as black folks, we've got to band together with the African community and bring our young man home, bring our young son home, and don't let the media divide us, because that's exactly what they're trying to do, is wedge us into believing that this young man's father is the assailant of this young man's death. I appreciate you guys letting me call tonight.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Well, Mr. Edwards,
do we have any other calls holding?
We have no other calls holding, and we have about 2 minutes left.
All right, then. I guess we can go ahead and wrap it. Again, we appreciate Blog Radio allowing us additional time. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm in a somber mindset right now. Because it's no doubt in my mind, and I say it in my column for this for next week in the Spokesman Recorder, that the white media here has basically, along with black operatives, have basically destroyed this man and his family. And as this last caller said, and I appreciate the depth of his analysis, is that they have effectively made sure that if something did happen, the trail has grown so cold that this will be a cold case within a matter of a couple of weeks.
Yep, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, Don Kirkland and James Brown, take us home, man. Thank you. Thanks for our listening audience.